Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. I'm Annie Gibson.
And I'm Helen Thorne.
And we've got a guest, Helen Thorne.
I know, and she's really awesome.
Yes, it's Vivi Brown. Hello, Vivi.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great. Tired.
Yes.
Yeah, but great.
Good,
yeah.
Good.
Excellent.
Now, Why are you tired? By which I mean, how old are your children? Let's be honest.
Okay, exactly. Yeah. So I'm tired because a 16-month-old, Josephine, and a 4-year-old, Effie Grace, and just generally, yeah.
You're in the,
yeah,
you're
I'm in it.
I mean, I'm sure you know the phrase, you're in the trenches, my friend.
Yes.
You are in the trenches.
I am, yeah, indeed. Yeah. I'm going to have to say that lockdown, I'm not even going to try and act like I'm the most, like, perfect, like, lovely, wonderful apple pie baking mother. It was the most hardest thing I've ever experienced in my life.
Wait. Harder than childbirth?
Yeah. Second child came out like, boop.
Yeah.
That was just really quick.
So awesome.
First child, yeah, that was really hard. So maybe not as hard as the first time, but it's been intense, I must say. It's just full on.
Yeah.
Full on. And I don't think I've bought so many sort of like activities and Amazon. You should see our house. We've built everything.
Yeah.
I've built everything. I think every bit of cardboard has been used.
Yeah.
I think one afternoon I built a house
out of cardboard. Is that when you knew you'd really lost it?
Yes.
I'm building myself a new house and I'm going to live in here.
And the kids weren't even doing it with me.
Yeah,
I was just like, I'm going to finish this.
So yes, so we know about your family, but tell us about you, Vivi Brown. Who are you?
Oh God. Well, I am a musician, firstly. And I am an artist in a sense of, I love photography and being creative and all those kind of things.
Cardboard crafts. Very strong.
I met my husband at a comic book launch where he was making my comic into cardboard. So there is a real history of cardboard making in our family.
You love the cardboard.
And I'm a mother, of course, mother of two. I am an author.
Yes, you are. We're very excited about your upcoming children's book.
You've done
Phoebe Brown.
Amazing. So I'm a little bit of, I call myself, when people ask me in the countryside what do I do, because I've recently moved to the country, I just say I'm a hustler.
It's good that you've got the accent down already. The country.
The country.
Lovely.
So I'm a creative hustler.
You know,
I like to do lots of creative things.
Yeah. And you've got a new album out, you said, soon.
Yes. So it's been quite a while since my last album. Glitch came out in 2015. I've got an album coming out next year, March, on Mother's Day. And I'm really passionate about this project. It's an album about motherhood. And I've interviewed a collection of women who have spoken about what motherhood means to them. And I'm sampling their words into the music alongside photographs of these women. So you'll be able to hear their words and see their faces and their, you know. So it's quite three-dimensional thing.
It sounds amazing. That's art, that is, Helen. She's doing actual art. We're just pissing about in catsuits, swearing and drinking.
I know.
She's doing bloody art about motherhood.
You need to see it.
Unbelievable. Such depth and an intrigue and insight. And we just tell tit jokes, silly.
No, tit jokes can be art. Again.
Oh, I feel like we're missing a trick. I've heard there's loads of money in art as well. There's loads of money swilling around, isn't there? Yeah. but going back to the countryside thing, because you got in touch with us because you read an article in the... you read an article? No, you wrote an article. I read an article that you wrote in The Guardian. Yes. And it's about your move to the countryside, because you actually, you lived around here, right? You were a Southeast Londoner.
Well, my backstory is I grew up in Northamptonshire. Mm-hmm. So I grew up kind of in the country anyway. And then I moved to London when I was 17, as you do, you know, whole thing. And I moved to America and lived there for quite a while. Lived in LA for about 8 years. And then came back and lived in Southeast London. So most of my adult life has been in cosmopolitan, metropolitan cities. But then obviously I had my kids and we decided to leave London. Expensive, as you know, that we wanted. Mm. And also there was a real pull back to the country for me from childhood. I wanted the kids to, you know, experience the things that we'd experienced. My husband's also from the country. But yeah, it was different. Moving back as an adult, I think being there as a child, there was, I don't know, it was more, my memories of it are more nostalgic, whereas now there's kind of more of a realization of certain things. And it's not every day, but there is things that you as a black woman have to kind of go up against at times. It's not all the time, you know, but yeah. And that's what the article was about. That's what I was writing about in The Guardian, what it's like to be a black woman and mother living in the countryside. So yeah.
And you were saying in the article, like, things like at a playgroup another mother wanted to touch your child.
Yeah.
Like, what are some of the incidents that have sort of prompted you to write the article?
It was just obviously when living in London and having friends who have kids in London, I'd never experienced them talking about those kind of things. So yeah, in a play group, a woman, she came up to me and she said, oh, you know, your child's hair looks really funny. Can I touch it? And I sort of didn't know what to do. And then she just put her hand in my child's hair, almost like petting her. And I was just...
I mean,
shocked.
I don't know how I would respond in that situation.
Well, I was quite open and said, you know, please don't touch my child's hair. But you're kind of trying to balance between, because obviously baby groups are a nightmare anyway. Right. There's that sort of, I mean, for me personally, the whole baby group scene, I get quite nervous and anxious. It's like being at school.
Absolutely.
Like trying
exactly
to make friends and things like that. So you're already trying to be good and make the right friends and, you know, be accepted and all that kind of thing. So you kind of on your best behaviour and you don't want to have to be political. You don't want to have to, you know, have a political discussion about, you know, ignorance and microaggressions.
But then here you're just sitting there going, okay, mustn't let my child lick that child's maracas. Oh, here comes a microaggression. What the fuck? What am I supposed to do?
So I politely said, please don't do that. And she stopped and I kind of walked away feeling a bit like, especially, and I could tell my little one felt slightly violated. There was another time that it happened and I actually put my hand in the woman's hair.
Wow. Yeah. I like that.
I was really, Good it was quite you. Just, and she sort of stopped and she thought, oh
yeah,
right. And I think it clicked in her mind that, you know, it didn't feel good for her. So, of course, it's not going to feel good.
Because it's very invasive. It's
very invasive.
She had to experience that.
Yeah. And it wasn't even like a gentle. It was like...
you can't obviously see this, listener, but Vivi nearly just fell off her armchair. It was a very, very vivid image.
Yeah.
Yes.
But there have been others as well, you know, that you sort of face. And some of them are met with, oh, he's 80. Oh. It's okay, you know.
Is it okay? No, it's not.
You know.
Yeah.
And so along the way, you try and be understanding, and you don't want to come across as the angry, annoying, you know, black woman who's like got a, in quotes, chip on her shoulder. But at the same time, you know that this is not right. So how do you navigate through that? And I think that's what I really wanted to get across, that there is still that level of ignorance, and kind of explored the reasons for that and why, and kind of got a bit sociological about it. So yeah, but don't get me wrong, it's not all like that. There are some amazing, I've made some fantastic friends where I live, and there are some wonderful people, but it is still, it still exists.
Yeah, and it's there is a massive lack of diversity as soon as you step out of the M25.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ellie and I notice that when we go on tour and just look, you know, when we look into the audience of our gigs and things like that, there's just not the diversity that you see in London and bigger cities. And I know personally from growing up in Australia, which is very racist, where I grew up, you know, there's lots of things that I feel really embarrassed about, like when I was growing up and we would put on school musicals, and I remember one year they did the Jackson 5 and they painted 5 people's faces black, and that was, you know, no one batted an eyelid, that was just what we did. And I look back with such horror about how, you know, black people and people with different backgrounds were treated, and, you know, I just, it's embarrassing, but also I don't want that for my children, and I, you know, use those experiences.
Yeah.
But there's very, very little diversity where I grew up, and I think how different my children's lives are now growing up in London, where there's probably 30 different backgrounds in their class of 30.
And that's why I wrote this children's book. Because for me, like, my daughter, she goes to a village primary school where there's only 2, one dual heritage child and one black child. And for me, I felt, okay, there's a lack of multiculturalism. That's fair enough. You know, is what it is. But I would love this book to penetrate and speak to all children, whether they're black or whether they're white, just to get a sense of diversity, even in the rural areas. And I really do feel like children nowadays are growing up differently, in a sense where even if they're in the countryside, because I was speaking to the school at the time, you know, when I was... you know, when you're choosing schools, I asked a lot of questions about how they are supporting diversity in such a rural environment. And they were great. You know, I think there's more awareness of making sure those things are present in schools. So children nowadays are, even if they're in the country, are getting diversity within the books that they're reading and, you know, the toys that they're playing with. And I hope that the children's book can be part of that conversation. But honestly, it was even talking about the children's book and diversity, there's a problem in publishing as well, I found, because I got in touch with a lot of publishers, and a lot of them got back to us and said that they felt a character, a black lead character, was a niche market.
You are kidding me.
No.
I mean,
what?
I mean, there's so much to unpack there.
I know.
Not only that they even think that, which is outrageous. They thought that was okay
to write,
to say out loud, to write down, to send to you, a black person, or indeed to anyone.
Yeah.
They thought that was okay.
Yes, and to be honest, I was expecting, when we wrote the email, I actually didn't think we were ready with the book, you know, so I was expecting the process of, okay, let's go back to the drawing board, blah, 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 more of an email of, this isn't not quite right for us, or I think you guys need to work on the book a bit more, or you know, you get prepared for that sort of rejection, because I've never written a children's book before, so for me it was having the humility to know, okay, we might get back, you know, those kind of emails and try and work on it. But it was weird, such a juxtaposition, because it was, we love the book, it's great, this is, you know, it was all positive, and then it was just like, but it's a niche market. So I wasn't expecting that at all. I was kind of like jumping up and down happy, like, yeah, what, you know.
That's outrageously offensive. Awful.
So I think that there's a real issue in the publishing sector as well that needs to be looked at. And just generally about the diversity. And I hope I'm just a little tiny sort of tadpole in this ocean, you know, of books and things like that. But I hope my little tiny book can contribute to the conversation that we need more diversity, and it needs to just not be a niche. It just needs to be whether you're white, brown, whatever colour you are. It's just a child at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I mean, take a breath.
Oh, I know. I wasn't. Yeah. I thank you for sharing that, because that's really brave of you to, because it's, you know, whenever you're creating something, like you've created music or any sort of art form, you are expecting some rejection, aren't you?
Yeah, I think it's important. I think one of my biggest lessons being in music, you've need it to reflect, to make yourself better. Like, you're not just going to get a yes every time. You need to learn your craft. You need to have criticism so that you're able to grow.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've, the amount of no's that I've had throughout my career, or you're rubbish, or, you know, it's, you just get, you just, it's part of what we do. Do you know what I mean? Right. Like, you have to.
Well, it's part
take
of life
it.
As well. I mean, we've all been turned down for a job or a boyfriend or a girlfriend or whatever. You know what I mean, we've all had that. Yeah, but that's different. That's a different.
It's different.
Level.
It's different. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We weren't expecting it. I'd never say who, and I'd never really. I would never.
No, she will after the podcast. Yeah, that's fine.
She's writing it down now and pushing it across the table.
Yeah, it's in Morse code, but it's fine.
We've had, and I'm not saying this is in any way the same experience. I know our experiences are different. I understand that.
Yeah.
But we have, Helen and I have been turned down for numerous TV shows and radio shows over the years. And niche is a word that we've heard just about being women and being, and we're white. Do you know what I mean? We've got privilege and we're facing that.
We know who we, but when they say, oh, parenting is niche, and we're like, what? I'm pretty sure, there's a lot of parents out there, and if you're not one, you know one. You've got an understanding of what a parent is.
We had one guy at a TV channel say, although our channel is female skewed, so a channel for women, we're worried that your subject matter might alienate a male audience. And again, like you, I was like, I guess this is maybe similar to you, I don't know, but I was like, but you're not telling me I'm not funny enough, or not good enough, or not ready, or I need more work, or you've already got someone who's better at this than me, you're just saying, and I was like...
They're worried that the men might be a bit sad, or that their tiny balls might be somehow affected by our very funny humour.
Yeah.
So it is feeling like, why is there this, well, we know why, but there's this thing, isn't there, if it doesn't fit the white male, that is still the dominant cultural demographic that we're all faced with.
Absolutely.
So,
and then suddenly 100%. We are the other. We are the, they're not normal, they're not whatever. That is,
I mean, fuck these pricks, to coin a phrase.
We need to build our own TV channel and book publishing house.
That's what I think is amazing. Like, good for you. That's what we feel like. Well, all we have to do is just keep making it. If you're not going to help us make it and do it for us, we just have to do it ourselves,
totally.
Right?
100%. I'm all about that. I've set up my own publishing house called Woke Kids Publishing. And I'm determined now to just publish this book and publish other books. And it'll be slow, it'll be indie, but you know what I mean? It will grow. And I think I'm a massive... You know, I've come from a major label background, but I set up my own label and put out my own records. So this whole indie ethic is my... I love it. Like, if someone tells you no, just do it yourself. Grow it. Take your time.
Yeah.
You can make it happen yourself. Like, own your own stuff. Do you know what I mean? So I love it. I thrive. I love meeting other women as well, where they've been told no, and they just make it work. And my mum, I get it from my mum. She runs a private school in Northamptonshire. My parents were a Jamaican couple, black couple, who moved to the countryside and set up a private school. It's just such a juxtaposition, like, from a conceptually, like, you know, in society. And they sold everything they had and started this business, and they were met with countless no's, countless racism, countless people saying that this is not something they should do, and they persevered. So watching my parents go through that, I feel like I'm really inspired by them to, like, just own it, own your shit, make it happen. Women, make it happen, you know, mums, make it happen, you know, do it. And I think, especially having the kids, I mean, I think I'm waffling on now.
No, good. We'll tell you to stop. We'll tell you no.
But like, when I had my first, and I experienced a lot of postnatal depression. It was really heavy for me. Like, I went through the mill with it, to the point where I had to have therapy, with a near sort of almost suicide. It was dark. So for me, like, the idea of I'm coming out of that now, I really hope that moving more towards what this album is about, the motherhood album, and just generally owning things.
Yeah.
As mothers, I've realised it is so hard. Because before I was a mother, I was like able to hustle so much harder before having kids. Mm. And then you have the kids and it's like your whole being is changes.
Yeah.
And I found it so hard to navigate as an artist and a woman who thrived off hustling with kids. So for coming out of that and now finding myself again, I just encourage, if you're a mother listening to this and you're going through that process where you're trying to find your new hustle or your new thing or that hustle you had, just honestly keep going and own it. I'm hitting the chair right now.
That's my furniture, baby.
Sorry.
No, please, hit away.
I sound like a preacher.
No, I love it.
You need that motivation, though, and you need that support. Yes.
Because that was going to be my question, really. I mean, I think that's great. Like, I guess, I'm thinking of someone listening to this who's like, fuck, I'm in the shit. Do you know what I mean? Man. How do I pull my... You're obviously, like, out the hole, right?
Nearly.
Yeah. It's a process for all of us.
It's a process.
But if you're really in the shit, how do you... Was there a catalyst? Was there one day or one thing that happened to you that was like, okay?
Yes. Well, I mean, for me... Ooh, I might get emotional. But for me, I got in my car and was driving to a hotel with sleeping pills and just driving around aimlessly, and my husband was like, I knew deep down I wasn't going to do it. Was a weird feeling. It was just numbness and trying to figure out a way to survive, basically. And my brother, who's a mental health nurse, he found me in the car, just like staring into nothingness. And he said, Ness, that's my family call me Ness. You know, you need to go and you need to see a GP. You need to get some therapy. You need to really take this seriously. And he drove me straight away to my GP. And I got an appointment immediately and I started behavioural therapy, and it was a life changer for me.
Mm.
Absolute life changer, because for me there was a whole backlog of stuff that I hadn't dealt with, that when I became a mother it was like it just all came out.
Oh, so it wasn't just having the baby, it was
all of it.
Stuff,
it was
right.
all of it. Yeah. It was being a model and told you can't eat. It was, you know, the concept of what beauty is and trying to prescribe to that level of beauty, but you just had a baby and you're like, I put on, how am I supposed to get back to that weight like that I used to do when I would model, you know?
If that's even possible. Is that even possible? Like, yeah.
I've given up. No, it's not. I know. It's about self-love, I think, for me. I've really realised it. I think the music industry and the fashion industry, the industry that I'm in or have been in, They teach you to not love your truest self. They're always trying to mold you into a version of something else. Mm. And, you know, it's a lot of pressure. You can become a mother. And I think all of the things that you might not have dealt with, for me anyway, it just all was coming out.
You can't hide that stuff anymore. I think that's one of the things, especially when you're up in the middle of the night, all your thoughts just sort of rise. It's like Pandora's box.
Yeah, and your tits are just hanging on the floor with
absolutely.
Breasts leaking.
Yes.
You know, it's a lovely image again.
It is, and I think, you know, but it is that you go quite existential because you're like, who the fuck am I now?
Yeah,
I'm this mother, I'm meant to be this, and all the expectations. And of course, motherhood comes with such a loaded image of, you probably think, oh, this is the kind of mother I want to be. And then you get into motherhood and you're like, oh, God, no, there's all these other things I never really knew. So I think you're right. And I think everyone will feel that in one shape or another, or extreme to another. But it sounds like you had a pretty hard time.
It was tough. But I've come out of it. And I think a lot of women have been through it. I think with this exhibition that I'm trying to do in the music, speaking to the women, honestly, even friends who I thought were the most together mums are opening up about having been through a moment of depression. It's just, I feel like we're trying so hard to hold on to perfection. There's so much pressure on us as mothers that I think a lot, probably all of us go through, not all, but, you know, there's a lot of women who are going through it. And I really hope that the album, this exhibition, kind of just shatters that perfection thing. And there's been lots of discussions and talks about this, podcasts, and I don't know, it's not the first thing, you know, I'm not the first person to try and talk about it, but I hope I can. It's another form of a contribution, like the children's books, a contribution for needing diversity, and the album, this is a contribution of trying to talk about that very sort of real subject. But I'm doing all right now.
Yeah.
I'm all right.
You're creating things and you're motivated and you've got that energy back, which, you know, some Definitely. Days you just want to just eat biscuits and, you know, if you get through the day.
Well, yes, and I wonder if it's worth saying that maybe as well, like, some days you need to eat biscuits and maybe that's all right. Like, did you feel a pressure, like, when your baby's, I've, you know, the baby's asleep, I've got to write a novel, yes, or in your 100%. Case write a song, or, you know,
yeah you feel, you know, you've got the, there's so much, there's no hardly any time to do anything. And so for me, I defined my everything by being creative, by music, by all of those things. So I had to, in those spaces, I was like, yeah, that's what I've got to do. And then I was so used to turning things around so quickly because I was a bit, you know, I love a project, a good project, get it done, get on the emails, you know, get it done that week.
Yeah.
Let's move. Let's make this happen. Mm. I was so used to that pace. Mm. And then obviously when having the children, it's like something that would take me a week, like a music video delivery. I could deliver that in a days. My husband, you know, we would work together as a creative team. Take me months. This mother thing, I've started when Effie was born and she's four, so it's taken me 4 years to get a project I know would have happened quickly. So yeah, I think going back to the, you have to be kind to yourself, you have to sort of readjust meaning of what meanings are, and just embrace the new pace. And if it's going to take 4 years, it's going to take 4 years. It was going to take, and sit down and have a chocolate biscuit. And it's totally okay to do that. Yeah. And yeah.
And it's okay, I think. You're thinking about biscuits. You want some biscuits? I'll get some biscuits.
I've been doing my viral marketing. We're actually sponsored by Foxes.
Johnny McVitie's in the next room. And I think as well, you know, it's like you hear a lot these days about relationships being up and down. I wonder if it's like that for us as mums as well. Like, maybe you do have a day when you get up and go, yes, I shall begin my novel today, and you write 5,000 words, and maybe the next day you're just fucking knackered because you've been up all night with the baby, or you're just, you know, whatever. And that for me was like going, oh right, you can get back on it slowly as well, right? You don't have to do it I'm back now, here I go. That's why I think like going back to work is such a struggle for many people, because you don't have that choice, like if you've got a proper job, isn't it?
So I almost wish I had one, though. Sometimes I look at my husband and I'm like, oh, I'm kind of like envious of his structure, because I'm freelance and everything I do is based on like hustling. That time to hustle is so valuable for me, for my next whatever, that it's in those moments where I get that day to like just sit and just brain. It's like your brain, your cogs are moving, and you need, you know, as a freelance, you need that time.
Yeah.
So sometimes I was like, oh, I wish I could have had, if I had a job, you know, like it kind of forces you back into structure. And I'm so in awe of freelancers who've just got it together and they're just doing it, because I've found it really hard to hustle. Do you know what I mean? Like, as a freelancer, some people are great at it. I'm still learning to be great at that. And that's okay.
Yeah, it's all right. You've got a lot on, mate. Do you know what I mean?
And you're very young. Yeah. You've got like...
Yeah. Am I? Yes, please say that again, because I was...
She's very young, listener.
Do you mind saying how old you are, Vivi?
Go for it.
How old are you? I can't remember.
I just had my Vanessa. No, I did that one. 37 was my last birthday. So
I'm around. That's very young. You've got lots of time. I think this is... And you know, we've spoken about this on the podcast before. We're in the age of social media where we can see what everybody else is doing and achieving and all those sort of things. And it's easy to kind of get sucked in going, oh, there's a woman with a 3-month-old baby. Oh, and she's got two businesses and she's a model and da-da-da-da.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you only see a certain slither I always fuck this
sliver.
Up.
Sliver. Not slither. Slither is what snakes do. Sliver is a small slice of something.
Yeah. Of people's lives. And I think this is a thing. And it can be very overwhelming. And we've had people on the podcast talking about it, about that, and about just focusing on your own goals and whatever time you need to achieve them as well. Definitely. Because I think you can kind of feel like, oh, God, they've done this at this time. Or even with your own children, about seeing what other kids are up to at those ages. And it does take a little bit of, you know, deep breaths and strength to go, no, we're okay where we are now.
And I one of the biggest lessons I learned from music was, especially when you're in that rat race, especially when you're in the mainstream bit, because everything is like chart positions and press coverage, and you know, you're like it's like the stock exchange, like you are a share, you know, or whatever it is,
you're a commodity.
But I realized in 2013 when I decided to go independent that you define your own happiness and you define your own success. And when you compare it to everybody else's, you're going to go mental. So you have to just, it's almost like a sort of a mantra. You just have to say, what makes me happy? What is my definition of success? If your definition of success is just, you know, whatever it is, that's what it is. And so for me, I think that's been my mantra to just, even though it's hard sometimes, you know, especially in the mummy world, you compare everything, you know, developmental things like, is my child, you know, all of it. You just have to go back to the center and go, what is my definition of life, basically? Oh, God, am I a bit heavy?
Like, no, it's great. We're just getting matched with your wise words. I'm like, oh, gosh, no, I wish you'd been my mate when my baby was 3 months old. I was getting matched. She's so wise.
Am I?
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. That's my country drawl.
Can we go back to the whole no thing? Because on your bio, which I obviously read extensively, you talk about the people you said no to. At quite a young age, and like you were saying, like you got offered different deals and things like that.
Yeah.
And how did you know? Did you have a good sense of yourself when you were a musician, like at 17 or 18, and knew what you wanted? Because they're big things to be able to say no to P. Diddy.
Oh,
tell us about saying no to P. Diddy.
Oh my God. Diddy onto biscuits. Not a euphemism. Like not a euphemism.
Wanted a chocolate biscuit.
You said no to P. Diddy. What was he offering? Asking?
Yeah, he offered a deal, record deal, which was very, very flattering. A girl from Northampton.
Northampton. Come on, Northampton has a huge music scene.
It does actually.
P. Diddy had heard of it, and he flew over from America. Yeah. Where
he
was, California.
Well, weirdly, he it was quite cheesy actually. He flew us out, and we stayed in the Dream Hotel.
Oh, what's that? Is this a Northamptonshire landmark?
No, we went to New York.
Wow.
Stayed in the Dream. I thought it was, you know, to follow your dreams. It was quite thoughtful, I guess. I guess you chose that for. Wow. Yeah, but it was very surreal. Met him, he had a camera crew following him everywhere. I think he was documenting his life. Played for him, and he offered us a deal, but we got an offer from Island Records as well, and I felt, you know, all loads of artists was on that roster that I loved. And
who's on Island Records?
Amy Winehouse was on there at the time.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
Grace Jones is one of the first artists.
Was Pulp on there? They were one of my favorites.
Yeah, there's like loads of like really
cool,
credible.
Man. They're like cool.
Okay, sorry, I'm so
oh no
such a novice when it comes to records, music, and stuff. Yeah,
no, they were just legit. Where Diddy was obviously,
I mean, he's
legit.
Done some good work.
Yeah. It's P. Diddy, for fuck's sake. Yeah.
But it
wasn't always P. Diddy, of course.
It was Puff. Yeah. He went Puff, then P.
Puff. I don't think he's ever just called himself Puff. Hello, I'm Puff. Nice to meet you. Oh, this is my magic dragon.
Hey, Puff.
That's funny.
Puff, yes. Snoopy Dog, another one of your favourites.
Mr. Dog to you.
Yes. But yeah, what did P. Daddy, whatever his name is, what did he say when you turned him down?
Oh, well, it was...
Was it all done through people?
Yeah,
done
just through people. Yeah. Your people speak to my people, you know.
Yeah. You know there's a dartboard with your face on it in his office, you know.
I don't know, maybe. I mean, it was, yeah, surreal. Very, very surreal.
And you were 17, 18 at that stage?
Well, I was 23. Basically, okay. So I got signed when I was 17.
Mm.
But I moved to LA and I was basically shelved for about 4 years.
Wow. So you're a teenager living in LA with fuck all to do?
Yeah.
Fuck. Yeah. What's that like?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
You went to jazz, it says on the internet. You were in jazz bands.
I was. So basically when I was, if I do the timeline right, when I was between 15 and 17, I was in a punk band and a punky jazz band. Then got signed when I was around 18, moved to LA around 19, was shelved on a label. They didn't know what to do with me and made a terrible record. It didn't get released, got dropped, and went back to London, did the whole scene again, bars, clubs, playing with my one string guitar and all that lot, and a piano. And then got signed again when I was around 22-ish, and that's when the Diddy and the Island thing happened. And then finally it started to take off a little bit at that point. So it's been a long road for me. I think a lot of people that they know about Shark in the Water and that time in my life when things might have broke through in the UK, I'd been trying to do it since I was 17. Like, I'd already been signed and been through the mill with expectations of failure. You know, there's this stigma of if you get dropped from a label, that's it, you know. Mm. But we managed to get through, and I say we because it's a team. It's not just me, like, there's a team of us working towards it. Yeah, and then, yeah, just got signed to, yeah, said no to Diddy.
Yeah,
she did.
I know what I mean. God, yeah, but that's a lot of stuff. Like, you know, going back to, like, oh, yeah, there was some stuff to unpack after you had your baby. Like, I can see.
It's a lot, man. I know this sounds really, but there's going to be some roll eyes. I have written a book.
That's amazing. Wait,
okay,
I just
book.
Yeah, ours is a bit shit. I mean,
ours
is probably good.
Yeah, it's a I haven't. I mean, it's not ready to go. It needs a lot of work, editing and that. But it is a memoir to help young musicians navigate through the industry. So it's all the experiences, because I do. There's a lot to unpack. Like Amy Winehouse. I remember sitting in the back of a car with Amy Winehouse. And being, I was present throughout the whole of her Back to Black album. I was there when she was making it. I was in the room when she was writing it, and we were hanging out and she was talking. And it's so funny, like, there are so many fly on the wall experiences that I have. And I am nowhere Rihanna. I've had a very weird career of having a little bit of success. Mm. But seeing so much, like, things, you know, and even being a black woman in the industry, the experiences I've had, you know, things like, we sold like over 1 million records in America, but in the UK, no one knows about that. You know, there isn't, where there's artists that have sold less records in America and they're hailed as breaking America. Mm. There's so many stories as, you know, black UK female artists where we've experienced, yeah, a lot of, I guess, I don't know what the word would be. I wouldn't, racism is too much of a harsh word, but it's just a different level of acceptance being a British success story or something like that. So yeah, so that book is somewhere in the future, but I have started the process of a project where I want to speak to other black female artists, and I'm hoping to produce a documentary about that. So I've got a few quite well-known black artists who have come on board, and I'm hoping maybe in, I don't know how long that's going to take me to do. It's going to probably take me ages. That's always...
You're a multimedia node.
I'm a wannabe, honestly. You know when you've got so many ideas ticking in your brain? Mm. Like, when you're a creative person, there's just so much you want to do.
Yeah.
So I'm a bit of a wannabe. I wish I had more resources to make all these things happen, but I try my hardest to make them come to life. And so I chip away, and, you know, I write a lot in my notepad of the sort of media ideas that I've got, like books or anything.
Mm.
So, yeah. Anyway, I feel like I'm really...
No, absolutely.
So sorry, but people out there.
No one wants to listen to these bitches. Like, they've heard enough from the likes of me and you, Thorn.
Too much. But I was going to say, what are the lovely thread that is weaving through, you know, your book and your album and... your children's book is, of course, you know, you want to help people. There's a great, there's great purpose to the work you're producing now, and that you want to help people through the children's book that you've written, and also obviously an awareness of motherhood and pain and all that sort of thing. So there's such great drive for you, obviously, in that.
I think, I mean, when I was going to be a law, I wanted to be a lawyer. I got into university to do law, and I think from a young age I've been an activist for change. Like, I am passionate. I've always been passionate about sociology and the world, and, you know, and I feel like that is a thread in my life. Like, I always want to discover and challenge and change. And yeah, however I can do it, that's what I want to do. And I always want to, like, question things. I think when you're an artist or a creative, when you eat, sleep and breathe it, I think the one thing you always are trying to do with your art is to challenge, question and change. If it's changing someone's belief or their emotion, you're trying to shift something inside somebody through what you're making. And so for me, that, I think, I'm a creative hustler. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just hustle and try and make change in whatever way I can, you know, so.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Do you have, what is the music that makes you feel good? Like, if you're going, oh, I'm feeling a bit shit, like, I have to put on Kylie or Pet Shop Boys, something like that. Music is so important to my mood and bringing me out of a shitty slump.
Ah, oh, so difficult. I think there's two.
Yeah.
I do an oldie and a more current.
Yeah.
I'd say Chaka Khan.
Oh, yeah.
Good dancer, Chaka Khan. Mm-hmm. Alexa, Chaka Khan, I'm off, right?
It's a good job I've got a Google Home, otherwise we'd be going
home. And I love Little Dragon. I don't know if you know the band Little Dragon.
Oh, no. That sounds young and trendy. And they're a new trendy band.
They're quite trendy, but they're really, really good. Yeah, they're really good. Yeah, so wicked. I love Prince as well. Oh, God, there's so much to choose from. Do you know what I mean? But I'd have to say those three.
Even I've heard of Prince, so that's good. I'm going to check out Little Dragon. That's good.
They're really good.
Yeah. Have you got motivational songs? Because music has been, I've just gone through divorce, separation, and I had like tracks that I played every single day.
Mm.
It was a bit mental, but they were almost like a comfort thing. Like, I had to sing along to them. One was like,
I Hate You So Much Right Now by Killies.
Song called Song for the Dumped, and it was about a breakup, and I played that, and there were two times where the kids were like going, no, mummy, no, stop playing that song. So that was really good. Ben Folds Five.
Oh.
Yeah, and it just says, the line is, give me my money back, give me my money back, you bitch. I want my money back. And don't forget to give me back my black T-shirt. Yeah.
Yeah. I just can't imagine how that fitted with your mood.
It's a really angry song.
Yeah. I often, in just generally in my life, I have a lot of frustration, irritation, difficult things I have to overcome. And I like to listen to Thorn in My Side by the Eurythmics. Very loudly on repeat. You know, that's all you ever were.
Phoebe has worked with Annie Lennox.
Have you?
Yeah.
How was that?
Oh, it was, she's amazing. She's a force. Oh,
she has that presence. She's got amazing.
Yeah. She's amazing. And yeah. I mean, when you work with people like that, there's a few people that I've worked with where I'm so nervous to talk to them. If they try and talk to you, you're just the whole time just paralyzed by fear, because it's like meeting
a god or something. They're very special,
but she was so down to earth. She's got one of those spirits where she's, you know, she just makes you feel very comfortable. She's all about young women, like raising us up. So yeah, she's awesome. Grace Jones though, I performed with her.
How was that?
That was next level. Honestly, like, you don't even know. Like, I was terrified.
Which gig was this?
This was the Island 50th anniversary. So it was all about amazing. The new signings and the old. And she had a glitter thong on and nothing on top on a podium. And I was like standing next to her, just like holding a mic, like, oh my God, I'm going to be sick.
She's in the nude.
And I was just like, I can't believe I'm here.
I forgot my glitter thong.
I want to go back to Northampton Market.
And was she up for you, or was she just like, I'm fucking Grace Jones, I don't give a fuck?
So she was rock and roll. Really rock and roll. And
I'm not a massive Strictly fan, as you know, but I tell you, I would watch it if Grace Jones was on it. Can you imagine?
She wouldn't do any moves.
Just a hula hoop. Glittery thong. Strut around. Crave Regal Warhorwood would fall over with joy, I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure she doesn't need to do it. I'm sure she doesn't want to. But my God, that would be amazing.
She doesn't follow the rules. And that's beautiful. Yeah, I'd love to see that as well.
Well, if you're listening, Grace Jones, you're welcome on the podcast anytime.
Great.
Oh, well, there we go. Now, we've just got time for a Scummy Mummy confession.
I've got one, Ellie. So yesterday, because we're recording all these before lockdown, Ellie and I were recording a podcast with the fabulous comedian Tanya Moore. And after we recorded the podcast, we had one, maybe two glasses of wine.
Bottles.
And I went home to my children and paid the babysitter and sounded sober. And then we sat down to watch a TV show and I fell asleep and my children had to wake me up after I'd eaten an enormous bowl of pasta, and I went, ah! And it was 9 o'clock. I was like, oh, okay. And I said, I've just been asleep for 10 minutes. And they're like going, yes, you have, mummy. And then, yeah, anyway, so that was my Scummy Mummy confession, that I was had a little post-podcast pissed nap.
Aww,
but everyone was happy.
Exactly. Nobody died.
No, it's fine.
Vivi, have you a confession for us?
Kinda. It does involve children.
Okay, that's fine.
That's
So I performed at Camp Bestival.
Oh, I love Camp Bestival.
Yeah. That's our favourite festival.
And I was performing, moving around, dancing around, and my tour manager on the side of the stage was like doing this sort of
doing the swipey neck thing.
And yeah. I was off. What? He came on stage with this sort of like cloth. I was like, what the fuck off, get off, what are you doing, you're like wrecking, get off, right? And so carried on dancing. He was like shouting at me at this point, coming back on with this thing. And at the end of the performance, I was like, Kes, what was that all about? He goes, V, you've got a massive hole in your leggings. And I wasn't wearing any knickers.
Wow. And Grace Jones, There was no glittery thong, listener.
That's it. Wearing nothing.
So it's like the Northampton version of Grace Jones, I feel like.
If it was a Glastonbury adult crowd, I probably wouldn't have been so terrified. But because obviously it was Camp Bestival.
Oh, mate, you were flashing your panini at all the kids.
I was mortified.
But what was the reaction from the crowd?
I'm hoping that
the dads had a nice time. some of the mums,
what's
I'm
the
sure.
name of this artist? I'll see her again, maybe late night.
I'm hoping I was moving around. I don't know. They must have thought it was a bushy part of my legging. So I don't know, but
amazing.
but
a fanny flash at a festival.
That's
nice.
The kind of confession we like.
Wonderful
stuff. Well, thank you so much. So let's go through all the things. So the new album is called
So the album is potentially going to be called Motherhood, and it will be out on Mother's Day 2021.
Excellent.
Exciting time.
And yes. The book is called Lily and the Magic Comb.
Yes,
is that right?
Lily yes. and the Magic Comb. And it's all about a young girl who has this magic comb who can transport her to anywhere she wants to go in her imagination. And yeah, it's about her believing that she can achieve anything, no matter who she is or what colour she is or whatever. Yeah, access.
Brilliant. Yeah. Brilliant.
Something in my eye.
And we will put we're going to put all the details of this on our webpage and yeah. on
Thank
all
you.
The promotional yes. thing. And where can people find you on the internet? Are you on Instagram yes. and the things?
Yep, so I'm on Instagram, VV Brown Official, Twitter, VV Brown. You can also find information on vvbrown.com. Lily and the Magic Comb you can find at wokekidsbooks.co.uk. And it will be available to buy at Waterstones and on Amazon as well.
Oh, she's so pro. She's so pro.
She's on it.
She's done the promo tours.
She's been
before.
Doing this since she was 17.
Exactly.
Helen. She knows like what us. She's doing, unlike us. Exactly. Yes. Oh, thank you so much, Viv. And thank you for coming from the countryside, journeying here.
Pleasure.
Back to
a break.
London. Thank you very much for listening. If you like the podcast, you would really help us out if you leave us a nice review on
yes,
iTunes. Not
please.
A shit one, just
five
a nice
stars.
One.
Five stars. Thank
yes,
you.
That
minimum.
Would be nice. Yes.
Minimum and maximum. And also, we have a shop, Ellie.
We do have a shop, mate.
ScummyMummyShop.com, and we sell t-shirts and mugs.
Thank you so much for listening. Thank you again, VV Brown.
Thanks for having me. It's been brilliant. Thank you.
Until next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. Just one more final, quite serious question. Yeah. Steps or not steps?
But the group, the music group.
Yeah.
I'm giving away nothing with my face.
Well, your eyebrows. Okay. I'm going to say yeah. Why not?
Yes, that's right. Because they're the best band in the world, baby. That's correct.
Why? Were you in, you were you were in Steps?
I'm actually Lee Latchford Evans.
No, you're not.
I've had a very, very few years. I love Steps. I'm a huge. I just love them.
No, it's a deep love.
Don't sound surprised. You don't know. I've just told you I've got three tits.
I mean, they were pop icons at them. The songs are
they
good.
Are pop icons.
The songs are good. The songs
they're
are good.
They're doing a big tour next year with our close personal friend Sophie L. Spexton.
Yeah. What's their song?
5, 6, 7, 8.
That one.
That's S Club.
In the
oh
business.
My God, VV Brown, they all look the same to you.
I'm tired.
That's what you're saying.
Pop racist.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.